Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are rotten to the core, corrupt, counterproductive. I'm Yana. Our number, if you'd like to join us over the next 2 hours, 877-300-7645. For those of you who are basketball and hockey fans, it's all over. The Stanley Cup has been decided, as has the winner in the association. The underdogs in both series played mightily, but both came up short. But that doesn't mean that there aren't conflicts to watch around the world.
I like to call these days, Craig talks to me about baseball.
Yeah, I'm more of a baseball fan than is Scott, because Scott's favorite sport is the NBA. Second favorite sport is hockey. Third favorite sport is football. The NFL followed by the NCAA variety, where Scott is a definite fan. But when it comes to the dark days of summer, Scott is not a baseball fan. So
it's all right. We have these other conflicts to talk about, though.
We do have other conflicts to talk about, and I won't be bugging you too much about baseball, because now that I'm on the East Coast, it's very difficult to follow either of my favorite baseball teams, in that their games start after I have gone to bed at night. I'm typically just not watching their games and not following them. So don't know much about the Dodgers or the Angels these days, other than they're playing fairly well, but not great. And I really haven't learned enough to adopt Cincinnati as a new favorite team. Although here in Central Virginia, I guess I could choose the Nationals. That is, if they didn't wear red, white, and blue and play in the nation's capital. But, as you say, there are these other conflicts. Do you know that conflict around the world is now costing these current range of conflicts $14.3 trillion? Yep. The conflict is expensive, evidently. Yep. You know, it doesn't matter if somebody is using a $50 Kalashnikov, or they're using a club or a barrel bomb. Conflicts are expensive. $14.3 trillion. Now, the reason that conflicts are expensive, and we're going to go through this report, and my guess is that you probably all know where the conflict is occurring, is because of the cost of the weapons being deployed. We have built a military that is mutually destructive. It not only is capable and has been used to break into destroy countries. We broke and destroyed Afghanistan and Iraq. We broke and destroyed Libya. We broke and destroyed Yemen. So we have a military that's capable of breaking and destroying other countries. Of that, there is no question. But it bankrupts us as we, the U.S., as we deploy it. So it is mutual assured destruction. There's a new definition of MAD. But the other issue with these global conflicts is they're occurring in an area that's already derelict economically. And so what you end up with is massive numbers of refugees who have no means to feed themselves or to shelter themselves. So the wars America initiated throughout the Islamic world, and then Muslims wanting to kill fellow Muslims, are are not being funded by those countries, but instead by the West. So it says that the world is spending $14.3 trillion a year. Not an aggregate, a year on war. 13% of the world's GDP. Man, can you imagine how much better the world would be if we just didn't have militaries? You know, and the United States has the largest of them. Just shut it down. It's wholly and completely counterproductive. That amount is equivalent to the combined economies of Brazil, Canada. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't mispronounce it because people get mad. Canada, France, Germany, Deutschland, España, and the United Kingdom. The report by the Institute for Economics and Peace has revealed. The divide between the most peaceful and least peaceful nations was deepening, the annual report said. Yeah, guess what? Nations like Iceland, which is the most peaceful nation, and the Scandinavian nations are the most peaceful, and they're becoming ever more peaceful. But Syria, in the heart of the Islamic world, and northern Africa, throughout the Middle East, that is the area that has become significantly less peaceful. Libya, which saw the most severe deterioration in peace, I guess deterioration of peace would be the greatest rise of terrorism and war over the course of 2014, was actually the second most deadly place to live. Syria was the most deadly. The Middle East and North Africa now ranks as the world's most violent region, overtaking South Asia, which received that ranking for 2013. Well, you know, South Asia has had serious conflicts between Muslims and others for a long time. It has been vicious. But now that America has completely destroyed the countries like Iraq and has created the civil war between Sunnis and Shias in Yemen and in Iraq, as well as in Syria, and that America has completely destroyed Libya and created a free-for-all between jihadi gangs there. And it's interesting, of course, that in Libya, it's all Sunni. So the war is between Sunni and Sunnis. In Syria and Iraq, the war is between Sunnis and Shia, as it is in Yemen. So if we were to extrapolate based upon that, which we could conclude, is that even when Sunnis annihilate Shias and kill 15% of the Islamic population worldwide, or at least kill them or enslave, subjugate 15% of the Islamic population worldwide, you know, which would be in the range of 200 million Muslims, either dead or subjugated as refugees, that even once they prevail in that regard, that their conflict between Muslims won't stop. All you have to do in that regard is look at Libya, where it is Sunni via Sunni for one terrorist group fighting another for control. So this is a series of wars, all of which America is the catalyst in having ignited, that are never going to end. That is until they finally destroy themselves, wipe themselves out. But here we are. We have the Islamic world becoming ever more violent, and we have this conflict surrounding Yahweh's favorite place. And if you look at all of northern Africa, which is all Islamic, and you look at all of the Middle East, which is all Islamic, except this tiny little sliver representing 0.2% of that region that isn't mostly Islamic. And it's about 30% Islamic. That little tiny sliver is Israel. And what did Yahweh have to say about the last days, and how all of the wars are going to focus around and through and in the promised land? And that is, my friends, exactly what we are witnessing, exactly as he predicted it. And that's why there's a woe to America in the 8th chapter of Isaiah, Yasser Yah, because America has been the instigator. We're the country providing the weapons of death. We're the reason that Muslims are now killing each other at record pace, and that the cost of war, remember, there would be wars and rumors of wars, and there would also be terrorist acts, are costing the world 13% of its gross domestic product, $14.3 trillion a year. The conflict killed 200,000 people in 2014, compared with 50,000 in 2010. That's exponential. That's why Yosha referred to these increases in these horrendous events as birth pangs. They're increasing exponentially. There is no end in sight. There is no end. Death caused by terrorism increased 61% in 2013, the report said, with the loss of 20,000 lives, mostly in five countries. Yes, that country we went in to eradicate the terrorist, Saddam Hussein, in Iraq. Now, it's the country most prone to terrorism. So, if we were in a war against terrorism in Iraq, well, that turned out really nicely, didn't it? Totally counterproductive. We made it the haven for terrorism worldwide. The second on the list is Afghanistan. The same is there. We allegedly went into Afghanistan to fight terrorism, and yet what we caused was counterproductive. We caused a radical increase in terrorism. Pakistan, the country that we bribe with military weapons to allow us to fight the war in Afghanistan, which is counterproductive. Nigeria, where Boko Haram is running amok, enslaving the little girls, making them sex slaves. And, of course, in Syria, the country that is now awash in civil war as a result of our invasion of Iraq. And think about that. Here's the five countries that are listed, and none of them are Libya. And the reason is that, I suspect, is because this is a report for 2014. We're 6 months into 2015. And now Libya is probably the most repulsive place to live on Earth in terms of constant acts of terrorism, an assault of terrorism. But it didn't even make the top five in 2014. Passed by Syria, Nigeria, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and the king of terror, Iraq. This is stunning. The IEP chief executive, Steve Kalelia, said the most surprising finding was, quote, the inequality with peace. Now, peace has become an equal rights issue. The inequality, we can't tolerate the inequality of peace. We need to have peace redistribution. Talk about political correctness running amok. The inequality with peace. I don't know how crazy people can become. He said some countries in Western Europe have now reached quite historic levels of peace, enjoying the lowest levels of murder rates and money spent on security probably in the country's history. No. No, I'm sorry. Murder rates aren't the lowest they have been in history any place on Earth. And second of all, money invested in security has also not lowest levels in history. But I appreciate the sentiment. But that would mean that America, of course, would be among the least peaceful nations because our murder rates are not only very high, but in addition to that, we spend more than the rest of the world combined on, let's put in quotes, security. But this says, but Iraq, Syria, Nigeria, South Sudan, and the Central African Republic had all become more violent in the past year. I can't figure it out. Scott, can you tell me how some countries in Northern Europe have become less violent? And countries like Iraq, Syria, Nigeria, the South Sudan, and the Central African Republic had all become more violent in the past year. And why didn't he list countries like Libya why didn't he list Iraq? You know, why didn't he list Egypt? Why didn't he list Pakistan?
I don't know. It sounds like they're doing the same thing that that they do when they talk about gun deaths, and they'll take like Chicago, Detroit, and all these cities, and just use those five cities in the statistics. It's probably has to do with the religions in those regions.
Oh yeah, let's see. Every one of those countries but one, the South Sudan, are Islamic. And in the South Sudan, the violence that has occurred there is a direct result of Muslim genocide being perpetrated on them for better part of the last 30 years. So, how could this idiot not know that there's a common denominator amongst the countries that are not violent and the countries that are more violent? And why would you be surprised? I mean, if you open your newspaper and you read that a suicide bomber did this and a jihadist did that and the Islamic State did this and Boko Haram did that, and you read through the list of atrocities being perpetrated around the world, how hard would it be to see that there is a common denominator in 99.99% of them? Would you have to be an expert on Islam to deduce that there is something common to 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts?
Well, I'm not, and I did, so.
But evidently, this scholar and expert was surprised that terrorism and war are more prevalent and growing in lands controlled by Islam. The IEP said that the total cost of the conflict amounted to 13.4% of the world's GDP. Well, if his reasoning is as sound as his math, I would question that. Large increases in costs have occurred due to deaths from internal conflict. IDPs, an IDP. You know the world had a problem with IDPs? I didn't even know what an IDP was until I read this report. Now, I am really glad that it was explained to me. An IDP is an internally displaced people. So, you're an IDP if you're an internally displaced person. You're not an IDP if you're just simply dead. That's not being displaced. And refugee support. UN peacekeeping, oh boy, the U.S. peacekeeping, boy, that's something we ought to fund because they're just doing a bang-up job, aren't they? And GDP losses from the conflict. Yeah, it's really tough to start a business in an area that has been ravaged by Islamic terrorism. Yes, indeed. Well, we'll continue with this report after the break. There is more spying than just the NSA spying on Americans or the CIA spying and torturing on the world. Evidently, the FBI is now investigating the St. Louis Cardinals spying on the Houston Astros. Now, I don't have any understanding as to why St. Louis, as the Cardinals, would find it appropriate to spy on the Houston Astros. I mean, they have what's called scouts, and they have what's called film, and they can watch the videos of the games, and they can talk to their scouts. But nonetheless, St. Louis has seen fit to spy on the Houston Astros. The FBI is investigating.
Seems like a good use of their time and money.
You know, I would much rather, on a 1 to 10 scale of preference, I would give this a 10 to have the FBI squandering their resources spying on Spygate 2, the Cardinals Spygate episode, because I can't stand the Cardinals, than I would them doing anything else that they normally do, because almost everything else they do is counterproductive. This isn't counterproductive, it's just not productive. I much prefer not productive over counterproductive. How about you?
I I'm just amazed that this is what they spend their time with.
Well, it's true.
There's the, it's whatever. I have no say in it, so.
All right. Also noted was the cost of supporting some 50 million refugees and IDPs, now that we know what IDPs are. The largest number since WW2. It had risen 267% since 2008. So there we go. We have problems in the Islamic world. Did you know that Islam was war prone? I bet you didn't know that. I'll bet you didn't know that terrorism was rife in areas controlled by Muslims. This is such a surprise to me. Well, Greece's central bank has warned for the first time that the country could be on a painful course to default and exit from the Eurozone and from the European Union. It comes as the Greek government and its international creditors blamed each other for failing to reach a deal over economic reforms. That failure is holding up the release of 7.2 billion euros. This is 5.2 billion pounds, or about 10 billion U.S. dollars in bailout funds. About 30 billion euro was withheld from Greece bank deposits between October and April, the central bank added. The central bank also warned that the country's economic slowdown would accelerate without a deal. Failure to reach an agreement would mark the beginning of a painful course that would lead initially to a Greek default and ultimately to the country's exit from the euro area and most likely from the European Union, the Bank of Greece said in a report. I up to this point, have seen the inevitability of Greece ultimately exiting the eurozone. I think that the likelihood is that Italy will be next, and that Turkey will never be accepted. And I actually see a possibility of those three southern nations. Turkey is considered Asia, but it's right at the border of southern Europe. It's a Mediterranean country. Actually becoming a consortium, if you will. Economically. And there's even a possibility that Spain would be, and Portugal would be the next two on that list, because it is the southern Mediterranean countries that are part of the Euro and Eurozone right now that are dragging everyone down. Those are the countries with the highest debt to GDP ratios. Greece is the worst. Italy is the second worst. Turkey is not reporting in that regard because they're not part of the Eurozone at this point, but they would be the third worst, followed by Portugal and Spain. So I think it's inevitable. I do not know if Greece is going to default and be exercised this year or next year or the following year. I can tell you that the consequence to the shell game that is international fiat money will be very significant, and that Greece will become the poster child for you better play along and pretend that the illusion that your currency has value as opposed to it being a liability, and that the myth of fiat currencies having value and that nations are economically solvent, you better play along and pretend, otherwise you'll be a Greece. And so it may be used to point out that this is the consequence if you don't pretend, if you don't show your faith and allegiance to the game we're playing, making nations ever more dependent upon the fraud that is central banks and fiat money. Or they will postpone Greece's eventual exit, but it's inevitable exit, to promote the illusion that central bankers can forestall national bankruptcy. and they can't forestall it. All they can do is prolong the agony and exacerbate the problem when it finally occurs. So we're going to see one of those two things happen with Greece in the near term. In the long term, Greece is going to go the way of the dodo bird. And this is significant as it relates to prophecy, because we are going to ultimately see three nations, one nation first, where the Taurus one is going to emerge. That's going to be Macedonia. And then Macedonia, which is a small and new nation, which fits the profile, is going to form an economic alliance with some of the smaller nations around her. With the destruction of Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia, there are a significant number of candidates. But on the larger scale, when the Taurus one forms the alliance that includes 10 nations, then it is very likely, I think, that the southern Mediterranean countries, like Portugal, like Spain, and I know Portugal's not really on the Mediterranean, certainly Spain is. And it may even touch the Mediterranean down there by Gibraltar, that area. But Portugal, Spain, Italy, Greece, Turkey could possibly all be part of an economic alliance. And I realize that they cross borders in religion, but nonetheless, I think it is feasible. And we ought to look at Greece in its role in leading that. Now, what's also interesting, today, the Pope came out with a stern warning on global climate change. And you'd say, okay, what is this nincompoop that I swear has an IQ less than 70? Coming out and speaking on a secularist humanist issue. I mean, we've already seen Roman Catholicism try to ally with Islam. And we know that in the Taurus One's global union of nations, that there's going to be a blend of socialist secular humanism, Christianity, led by Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox Christianity, as well as Islam, into this new world order. And so for that to occur, the Pope has to embrace many of the most important edicts and doctrines of socialist secular humanism. And foremost on the list of those would be human rights, number one, and number two, climate change. Now, climate change is the primary issue for the socialist secularists. And the reason it's number one is because it fits their mindset on a global scale. It's the means to collectively, socialistically redistribute wealth. It's the means to control sources of production and to control wealth, which is what they most want to do on a worldwide basis. And so it also is religiously pleasing to them because they view the environment as Mother Earth. So this is exactly what we would expect the Pope to do, not because he gives a rat's patootie about the myth of global warming, but because he is going to position Roman Catholicism and himself into the heart of the New World Order. The beast that is described as terrorizing the world in the last days is more than not Roman Catholicism. And I wouldn't go as far as to say that the Whore of Babylon is entirely Roman Catholicism, but Roman Catholicism is the heart and mind, the soul of that beast, and therefore the integration is now taking place. This also out of Greece, Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras lashed out at Greece's creditors. I mean, that's really the thing you want to do. You know, if you're begging people for money, if you're dependent on people because of your addiction to spending, to entitlements. What you really want to do is you want to lash out at those people who you're begging for money. I just think that always works. In fact, I can't think of a better scenario than to belittle and debase and to criticize those who you're asking for a favor, particularly when you've welched on your deal, particularly when you've begged and borrowed from them in the past, and you're unwilling to honor any of the deals that you've made, and you're unwilling and unable to pay your debt back. That's the best time, I think, to belittle those who have reached out to help you in the past. And so that's what this communist, Tsipras, has done. He says they are trying to humiliate Greeks. And he defied a drumbeat of warnings that Europe is preparing for his country to be excluded from the euro. The unrepentant address to lawmakers after the collapse of talks with European and IMF lenders at the weekend was the clearest sign yet that the leftist leader, he's a communist, has no intention of making a last-minute U-turn and accepting austerity cuts which are needed to unlock frozen aid and to avoid a debt default within 2 weeks. Financial markets for months indifferent to the wrangling over releasing billions of euros of aid to Greece. Actually, why would they care? Because it's all fiat money anyway. It's just all pretend. Let's just devalue the currency and send more Greece's way. Reacted this time now with mounting alarm as the Austrian chancellor flew off to Athens to warn Tsipras of the gravity of the situation. And the senior German lawmakers openly discussed the once taboo prospect of a Greexit. They're calling it a Greexit from the single currency area. Tsipras lambasted European and IMF policy. He said, "I'm certain future historians will recognize that little Greece, with its little power, is today fighting a battle beyond its capacity. Not just on its own behalf, but on behalf of all of the people of Europe." He said in a television speech, "Oh, yes, the deadbeats in Greece that don't want to work. The policies in Greece that have failed. The socialism that has destroyed the economy of that country. No, they're not to blame. No, as a matter of fact, the Greeks in them being dependent on others for their entitlements, and for their unwillingness to honor the deals that they have made with countries, and to pay their debt, and to adhere to what they had promised to do. No, they were not just victims, but they were the heroes of the average man. They should be considered as virtuous." Yes, indeed. Tsipras charged that the lenders were politically motivated. No, they're not morally motivated. They're not economically motivated. No, they're politically motivated in demanding pension cuts and tax hikes that hurt the poor. And their aim was to humiliate not only the Greek government, this would be the least important, but to humiliate an entire people. Wow. Yes, indeed. If you stop giving people that which they have not earned and do not deserve, you are hurting them. That's an interesting thing. That would be just saying that the 75 million Americans that are now getting something for nothing in food stamps, that you would be hurting them if you didn't give them next month's food stamps. That you didn't. That would be suggesting that that the absence of help is hurt. That if you give somebody assistance, like food stamps, that's not, if that is help, then the absence of help would be hurt. You know, I kind of grew up in a situation where the absence of help was not hurt. If you did not throw me a rope when I was trying to climb up a mountain, you would not be hurting me. If I chose to climb up that mountain without a rope, that's my own damn fault. Now, if you threw rocks on my head as I was trying to climb up the mountain, now that would be hurting me. But there's no rocks being thrown here. It's just that for decades now, others in Europe and the United States have constantly not only thrown but held up a rope from which Greeks were dangling. Now, if the rest of the world says, you know, you're not doing anything to promote your ascent to the top, and you're becoming a heavier and heavier deadbeat load at the end of this rope, we just don't want to throw you another rope. And we don't really want to hang on to this one either, because you're working against us. And by the way, you shouting derogatory statements at us as we're holding this rope is really not much of an incentive to continue to hold it. But that's how warped we have become. That's how warped socialism is, that a cessation of help is considered to be harm. And by the way, poor people aren't taxed. I mean, in America, 50%+ of Americans don't pay federal tax. And 50% of Americans are net beneficiaries of government handouts. You know, the tax burden in socialist countries like Greece is already shifted so far right that the economies have failed because there's no incentive to be productive, because they have created a scenario where success is punished and failure is rewarded. That's where we're headed in America. That's why our economy is failing as well. Now, the 40-year-old leader's rhetoric left the world on the precipice of a nation engaging in economic default. What's going to occur? Is Glenn right? Is IQ right? Is this going to be the summer of our discontent? We'll return after the break.